coming up on the Big Picture podcast. Look out for warning signs that suspicious individuals may be in contact with your kids over the internet, such as spending long hours online, phone calls from strangers at odd times of the day, and withdrawal from family activities. Always remember, just as you won't cut corners when it comes to your physical security, you should also treat your cybersecurity with the utmost seriousness that it deserves. Welcome to episode 21 of the Big Picture Podcast. My name is Bidemi Ologunde. This podcast presents fascinating cybersecurity topics, news, and events, and how the lessons we can learn from them might affect us and influence our decisions, thoughts, opinions, and lifestyle choices daily, as well as how everything fits together to form the bigger picture of online security in this digital age. Today on the show, I'll be presenting the case of a medical center employee in Washington State in the United States who was recently charged with stealing the identity of 39 patients to rent an apartment and buy two cars. In the second segment, I'll be discussing ways to teach kids about good digital practices. Thanks for joining us. Let's get to it. So on Monday, May 3, 2021, prosecutors in Washington State in the United States announced that an employee of the Swedish Medical Center in Seattle, Washington, has been charged with identity and motor vehicle theft after officials said she stole the records from 39 patients, including elderly patients, to then forge identities which she used to rent an apartment and buy two cars. So all this was uncovered based on an unprofessional conduct charge that was filed by the Washington State Department of Health. The 37-year-old woman has also been charged in a separate criminal case with identity theft from patients of the Swedish hospital, also in Seattle. The victims were in two distinct age groups, so seniors aged between 70 to 90 years old and younger women who looked like the suspect. The defendant has worked in the medical field since at least 2007, and prosecutors allege that she committed the fraudulent crimes while she was employed as a certified medical assistant for Swedish Medical Center between November 2018 and December 2019. In July of 2019, this defendant used a patient's personal information to buy a $51,000 car from a dealership in Bellevue, Washington, according to charges filed by the Washington State Department of Health. The dealership later learned that the vehicle had been purchased under an assumed name. Employees of that dealership checked their website and determined that the suspect had used another stolen identity, which belonged to another patient at Swedish Medical Center, to view car prices. About 3 months later, the suspect used another patient's information to purchase another $25,000 car from a Mazda dealership in Linwood, according to criminal charges filed in Snohomish County Superior Court. So in late November 2019, a Swedish medical center patient contacted police in Briar, Washington, when she noticed that a social security number had been used to apply to rent apartments in Marysville and Everett, both suburbs of Seattle, Washington. So police in Edmonds, Washington then served a search warrant at the Linwood apartment where that $25,000 Mazda was delivered. They found the defendant's belongings, including prescription drugs, in her name, but the Mazda was not found there. Days later, police found the Mazda where it had been parked outside a second apartment in Everett, another address associated with the suspect. So they impounded the Mazda and noticed that it had license plates for a different car. So the license plate on the Mazda was actually for a 2017 Audi that was registered to the suspect. So if all this seems a little bit confusing, it actually really is confusing. So to summarize, we have this woman, a 37-year-old employee of the Swedish Medical Center. She had been stealing patient information from all the patients he had access to. Interestingly, these patients were either 70 to 90 years old or younger women who who looked very much like her. So she stole patient's information, social security numbers, and used those information to buy two cars. However, when she bought these two cars, she didn't license them, because that would have to be done in her own name. So she put the license plate from her own car, a 2017 Audi, on the Mazda, and then parked the Mazda at one of the two apartments that she also used this fake fake identities to rent. So officers then asked the suspect how she was able to buy a car and rent two apartments, or how she was able to buy two cars and rent an apartment in other people's names, to which she replied that she knew people who told her how to do it. The suspect was arrested in late 2019, and from the Snohomish County Jail, she made at least four phone calls to her ex-husband. And then during those calls, she mentioned the specific name of one patient whose identity she allegedly used to buy the Mazda that was parked in the apartment in Linwood. She was released from jail when prosecutors did not file charges in late 2019. However, in September 2020, almost a year later, she was charged with felony charges of first-degree identity theft, second-degree identity theft, and motor vehicle theft. Court staff sent letters to three addresses affiliated with the suspect. The address she has on her own official driver's license, and those two apartments that she was renting by using the fake identities that she stole from a patient. She, however, did not show up to court. And the Snohomish County Superior Court judge then issued a bench warrant for her arrest about 3 months later in December of 2020. That arrest warrant appeared to be active as of Friday, April 30, 2021. So almost 4 months before she was actually arrested. So maybe she was kind of evading law enforcement or keeping a low profile, but we know that a county judge issued a bench warrant for her arrest back in December of 2020. In a separate disciplinary case, the Washington State Department of Health charged her in March 2021, naming seven specific patients as victims. The suspect's health care certificate had expired since almost a year ago, and the Washington State Department of Health announced the allegations in a press release just last week. According to state records, the suspect was certified as a nursing assistant from 2007 to 2010. After a three-year break, she was then issued a medical assistant certificate in 2013. In divorce papers from early 2019, the suspect noted that she had about $23,000 in car loan debt for yet another car, a Toyota Corolla. So what's the takeaway from this incident? We have someone who apparently likes to live a lavish lifestyle. For some reason, she seems to be into cars, and she figured she would steal patient information as a way to keep up with this lifestyle. And following the timeline as well, there was some divorce between her and her ex-husband, and that happened in early 2019. And looking again at the timeline, it appeared she started this theft and identity theft in November of 2018. So we don't know much about her, but maybe the divorce she was going through affected some of her actions, and she figured she would have to steal people's identities to kind of keep up with certain appearances or get through her divorce. We actually don't know any of that information, but it's just interesting to see how when people engage in cybercrime, there is usually underlying reasons, and which pretty much explains every other crime. So it's just fascinating to see how all these things could serve as a red flag. So if there are people that we know that might be inclined to do these things, then maybe these are other things that we can also look for to kind of understand or explain this criminal behavior. So after the break, I'm going to get into how to teach kids about good digital practices, how to make sure the kids are safe online, especially now during the pandemic. We've seen how screen time has increased drastically across all age groups, both younger people and even older people. But it's important to make sure everyone is having a good cybersecurity hygiene, especially kids, and how they can stay safe online. Stay with us. Welcome back. So over the past year, as we all know, most people have been forced to spend more time online. And because of the pandemic, online habits have actually changed dramatically for both adult and younger internet users. Since the start of the pandemic, we've seen limits on screen time for kids thrown out of the window as they turn to online platforms for school classes, activities, games, and entertainment. This increased digital time has inevitably helped to spawn new cyber threats that put their online and physical safety at risk. It is therefore important to teach kids about online threats and the importance of good cyber practices in order to protect them from online predators, cyberbullying, identity theft, and malicious software. So the first thing I have here is to keep kids' online accounts private. This will ensure that their profile information and content can only be seen by their close friends and family members. So encourage your kids to prevent that urge to kind of show off or make people see what they're doing. And if they have hashtags on their posts, then that would make more people to see their posts. And just making things locked down prevents that risk of having a random stranger connecting with your kids and engaging them in conversations, either appropriate or non-appropriate. That saying that don't talk to strangers also applies online. Second, ensure that kids fully understand the importance of not accepting friend or message requests from strangers, because they can never be sure if the stranger is reaching out to them based on good intentions. So as much as online is meant to kind of interact with people, engage with people, even for adults, some interactions are not necessary and usually end up with bad feelings. So how much more kids that don't even have that emotional capacity to be able to process certain kinds of feelings. Next is encourage limiting the information and photos that kids post online. They should always assume that any information they share or make public on the internet can be seen or intercepted by anyone from anywhere in the world. So imagine years down the road, your child is applying for a job somewhere and they do a social media search and found out that they posted some controversial things when they were younger or engaged in some questionable social trends when they were much younger. Help kids set up strong, unique passwords for each of their online accounts and make sure that the operating systems of their smart devices are updated as soon as updates are made available. So again, this boils down to good cyber practices, because not only do we need to make sure we have good passwords, we all know that the operating system that runs on these devices have bugs in them every now and then, which is why these companies release updates so that the bugs in the old update, in the old version, wouldn't become exploited. So make sure you're on top of updating kids' devices as much as your own devices. Get them used to asking for assistance or advice when downloading new apps and games on their smart devices. So some threat actors actually put fake versions of popular apps on the App Store so that unsuspecting users would then download those fake versions and pretty much expose themselves to risk. So make sure you're involved in the kinds of software your children download, how updated those software are. There's a rating system for every software on every App Store. Make sure you check that rating system. If possible, do additional research online about that app and the safety and the security of that app. And that also applies to adults. It's not every shiny new app that is necessary to download. Make sure that you understand that under no circumstances should they provide their phone number, home address, school name, date of birth, or other personal information to any website or person over the internet unless an adult is present or aware of it. So, I mean, this is pretty self-explanatory because some sites ask for personal information to be able to sign up to get some bonuses or level up or that kind of stuff. But it's always important to have some adult supervision because, first of all, disclosing personal information is a no-no. And secondly, if personal information is 100% necessary to make an app run, then that app is just all sorts of questionable. Get them used to openly communicating with trusted adults about their online activities and to always report any suspicious activities on their accounts. Make sure that they never respond to any threatening emails, messages, posts, or text messages, and to immediately notify a trusted adult as soon as they see such messages. So this is included because we all know there are trolls on the internet, people that actively look for people they can engage with and make them upset. And as a result of that, the upset people then respond angrily, usually with things they didn't mean to say or type. So if children, again, who don't necessarily have the emotional capacity to interact online, much less manage upset emotions while interacting online. So kids should not respond to threatening emails or messages or posts or text messages, and they should notify a trusted adult who can better help them navigate those kinds of tense exchanges. Teach them about email-based threats, phishing attacks, and fake pop-up messages that may appear on their screens while using their smart devices. So there are some apps, some dubious apps that while a child is using the app, playing games or whatever, they bring up pop-up messages because chances are the child will tap the screen because that's pretty much what they've been doing since the app was running. So they'll bring this pop-up message. Usually sometimes it's about activate this for $10 or $20, and the big screen would say yes and a smaller button would say no, and then the child would tap the big button which says yes, and then they would charge the parent's account. So all of these are widely documented online about the questionable practices that some of these apps use, especially for kids, because they know the kids would not necessarily think before they click on it or ask permission because they're deep into the game they're playing and just go ahead and click everything. Look out for warning signs that suspicious individuals may be in contact with your kids over the internet, such as spending long hours online, phone calls from strangers at odd times of the day, and withdrawal from family activities. Use a trusted security solution with advanced parental controls that filters out inappropriate content and offers the possibility to limit screen time. Always remember, just as you won't cut corners when it comes to your physical security, you should also treat your cybersecurity with the utmost seriousness that it deserves. So that's all I have for today's episode of The Big Picture. The episode is produced, edited, and audio engineered by yours truly, Bidemi Ologunde. Please join me again next time as I continue with a deep dive on cybersecurity topics, news, and events, and how they can be applied to our daily lives for robust cyber threat intelligence and awareness. Make sure you subscribe to The Big Picture on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Podcast, Pandora, TuneIn Radio, or wherever you get your podcast from. Please share the show with everyone you think might benefit from it. And for questions, comments, or any suggestions, please send an email to bdme@thebidpicture.com. You can also get in touch on Twitter @bidpicture. Please remember to leave a review for the podcast. If your podcast platform allows you to do so, it will really help to promote the podcast and make it show up on the recommended list. And thank you for your time. God bless, and talk to you next time.